Big D Entertainment presents the Dave Holly Hour. Brought to you by Dazzle Shows Presents, The Vaudies, and Dipsy Doodle Productions. He's a variety entertainer, a former broadcaster and columnist, a true lover of arts, entertainment, good food, and fun times, including an occasional Jack Daniels. Okay, so a few Jack Daniels. Here he is, Dave Holly.
Welcome, everybody. It is weekend-y. That's right, another Thursday has rolled around, and this is our sixth one in a row. Yeah, how about that? Six episodes now for the Dave Holly Hour podcast. I'm Dave Holly. Thanks. Appreciate you joining me Thursdays. And, of course, anytime you want to listen throughout the rest of the week, even if you want to go back and listen to some previous shows, you may. That's the beauty. And also, thank you, Apple Podcasts. Yes, we're now on Apple. Up next, we're working on it, some technical things to figure out as well for the Google Play and Google Podcasts. And as I mentioned a while back when we were working on getting Apple online and so forth, when I talk about technical issues, it's not with them, it's more so with me, or more specifically, me finding somebody that can take care of some of those technical things for me. Aha! Yeah, there you go. That's what takes place here. So we're going to call this the Something I Don't Have episode. Yes, this is the six-pack abs. But it's not even so much that, but it is a couple of power-packed interviews we have coming up for you today. Crazy Frank from KBAC Internet Radio also has a little radio internet station called The Hog as well. And Crazy Frank Karaoke, which I tend to make quite often. And then also later on in the show, John Bowe, who is the artistic director of Old Town Dinner Theater in Worthing. They have a show that starts up a week from today called Sorry, Wrong Chimney. I suggest you put that on your holiday list. I already have it on mine. Our honorable mention today, we'd like to throw this out. We started it a few weeks back. Again, this is not to be honorable mention like, oh, and then you didn't get the blue ribbon. No, this is an honorable mention. Something that made me smile, giggle, whatever, throughout the week. Remember the second episode we had on Rachel Roberts from New Tech High here in Sioux Falls? I had been helping out her theater department the past 3 years when it comes to their little improv part of their curriculum that they do. And it's been a fantastic time. They sent the nicest thank you cards. Yes, that's right, cards, because there's so many in the class. And I just have a blast with these kids. They're unbelievable as to how quickly they pick up on things. So thank you to Rachel Roberts' theater class out at New Tech High. Those brightened my day. Well, Frank Anderson, Crazy Frank, always brightens mine every time I see him. We had a good sit down earlier this week. That's coming up in 60 seconds. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. Harper and Jack were nestled snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. The Night Before Christmas is one of the first American children's classics. Preserve the timelessness while personalizing it for your family. Dipsy Doodle Productions will provide you a downloadable digital file incorporating the names you want in this family keepsake. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. No Dasher, no Dancer, no Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To make this part of your Merry Christmas for only $39.95, contact Dipsy Doodle Productions at dazzleshows.com and use the Contact tab. Put "Twas the Night" in the subject line.
Merry Christmas, Harper and Jack, and to all the Pearsons, a good night.
From the Dipsy Doodle Studios at the world headquarters of Big D Entertainment, a 40-square-foot home studio in the middle of America, it's Dave Holly.
And welcome to the Dave Holly Hour for this
Thursday. Yeah, it comes out on Thursdays. We record at different spots throughout the week just to get everything in place so we can edit and make this a fine and dandy little show.
Sound professional.
Just for you. Exactly. That's what we want to do. And we are now joined by Crazy Frank himself.
Hello, hello.
How are you, sir?
I am living the dream and riding the rainbow, man.
Riding the rainbow, too.
I'm on the Dave Holly hour, man.
Well, this is especially a proud moment for me.
Okay.
Because you said recently you had turned down the opportunity to be on podcasts.
Yes.
But you accepted my invite, and I appreciate that.
Well, you know, you have been a fixture out at the Crazy Frank Karaoke thing and a big supporter of that. So when you asked me about it, I'm like, how can I not?
All right.
How can I not do this, man?
Yeah. And what the only thing that would have made it better is if we had a bottle of Jack Daniels in front of us.
Right. You should have done this at a place that sold Jack Daniels.
I need to find that where we can have a little quiet spot to be able to do that.
You need a sponsor.
I do need a sponsor.
A place that's got a like a fireplace. You can get people in. You got whiskey. Maybe have a cigar.
I'm liking your thoughts.
Yeah.
My new account executive. Except that would conflict with
Not even my own account executive. I think that's the challenge with radio. Guys like you and
that's
I, who are radio guys, we love this side of the business.
Exactly.
We love doing the thing. But when it comes to going out and selling it, it's something that's not as easily said as done.
It's not in the blood. It's a different factor.
Years ago, I was at a little AM station. I was making no money. And I had said something to the GM about not making any money. He said, have you ever considered sales? You're a good talker, Frank. Maybe you could be a good sales guy. So I talked to one of the other guys who was on one of the other AM stations in the group. And he's like, don't do it. Don't do it. You can't do it. It's when a sales guy walks in, a good sales guy, it rolls off of him like a fog. Like I imagine Prince when he would walk into a club that just rolls off him. I mean, who else is going to, you know, wear ladies' clothes like Prince did?
True.
And nobody laughed at him.
Yeah.
Now, if you or I walked into a club dressed like Prince, we'd get beat up.
That we would.
But Prince, he got women throwing underwear at him. It's crazy. So a sales guy has got just something in there, that inherent sharkiness that people love a winner. And on air guys like you and I, you know, we can dress ourselves up as much as we like. But at the end of the day, there's just something we're missing.
Very true.
But that makes sales guys terrible on-air guys as well.
Yeah, it is a double-edged sword that way. Now, here's the thing. You are an old radio guy, and you became
a new. Well, thank you for calling me old.
Well, you're also a new age radio guy.
Right, right.
Because you run an internet radio station.
Indeed, I do.
Yeah. Kind of by default, a little bit, because things didn't work out the way that they were always planned. And then you guys said, you know what? We're still going to have some good rock and roll in this town. And you started up KBAC.
One of the things that I knew going into that was never going to work. You know, I remember when I first started, I didn't know who it was. I had no idea who Chuck was. I knew nothing about any of this stuff. It was a blind box. I send my stuff in. I was living up in Watertown doing mornings on KS93, and I had reached the ceiling there when there was a very low ceiling. So I saw Sioux Falls. Oh, they've got a Costco. They've got a Wendy's. They've got multiple Wendy's. I need to go there. This is Mecca to me, right, at this point, after living 2 years in Watertown. I apply to a blind box ad. The guy, about a month later, sends me something back and says, we love your stuff. You need to come down here and talk to us. But first, go watch this video. Watch the video and then fill out an application. So whenever I apply for a radio gig and you tell me fill out an application, I think EEO, you know, this is why you're not interested in me. And then I watch the video, and the video was completely ridiculous. The production value was in the toilet, and it was like, it's a pawn shop, it's a racetrack, it's a concert venue, it's a tattoo parlor. We're going to mint our own coins. It's going to be, you know, I thought there's no way this is real. This is a bunch of guys sitting around in a garage smoking doobies and thinking, hey, if we had $1 million, man, this is what we would do. So I never filled out the application. A month goes by, and the guy starts calling me back. Their HR guy at the time, who they let go shortly thereafter. You got to come down here. You got to check it out. This is for real. You need to check it out. So I came down and checked it out. And it was too big to succeed. But I had hoped that they would hire a core of people who knew what they were doing. And then after year one, you go back and look and say, okay, we can see what's not working. Let's do stuff that works. And that never happened. So consequently, the wheels came off the bus, as Chainsaw said. And yeah, we were out in the cold unceremoniously. But we had such a hardcore following. Mm-hmm. The K-Bad following was ridiculous. They were just, I couldn't let it die. So that's why we started the streaming thing. And I had experimented with streaming radio in the past. But building the audience, building that initial audience to get you rolling was always is a cost prohibitive thing. If you're going to launch a new signal, even a radio station nowadays, you need a big name or you need something big to draw people to it. Otherwise, you could be the most incredible broadcaster in the world and nobody will hear it.
And you'd also have to have some big money.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So I guess I kind of piggybacked on Chuck's money. He spent a gazillion dollars promoting the hell out of K-Back just to pull the plug, or K-Bad, right, just to pull the plug. And he had all these people standing around like, well, now what do we do? And I just hopped up in front and said, ta-da.
And here we go with K-Back.
And here we go with K-Back. Yeah. And I'm proud to say that as of yesterday morning, our cumulative audience size is quite a bit larger than K-Bad's ever was.
Wow.
According to Nielsen.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. According to Nielsen, 22,000 was our rough cumulative audience with K-Bad. And we're at 34,000 with K-Back.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Now,
how good is that comparatively across the United States for an internet radio station?
And see, I don't have any hard numbers to know what the other stream, because other streaming guys aren't releasing their numbers. In fact, most radio stations don't release their numbers. But the reason they don't is because I don't think they want you to know exactly how few people really listen to a radio station. When I looked down the Nielsen report, because when we were with K-Bad, we subscribed to the Nielsen book and we had the numbers for all the stations in the survey. And, you know, you think of a station like Hot 104.7, which is usually the number one, you know, station in the market. According to Nielsen, there's less than 57,000 people total listening to that. And their average quarter hour is nowhere near that. You know, at any given time, at any 15-minute chunk, you know, you're lucky to have 4,000 or 5,000 people listening. And then you go down to like K-Bad when we were on the air, it was like 1,200. You know, now in the morning I turn the thing on, by 10 o'clock we've got 3,000 people listening to it. So if you go by quarter hour share, mm-hmm, and by QM, we're doing quite well with K-Back. And
that's yours.
Just me in the basement playing music.
Yeah. And you started another radio station.
The Hog, yeah.
The Hog.
Yeah. And that was, you know, I've always been, had a country bone, if you will. I grew up in the South. I grew up watching Hee Haw. My second cousins are the Bellamy brothers. So I've always had that in my fabric, so to speak. And always wanted to do a country station. But for whatever reason, I just, you know, my professional career on air, a lot of times, in fact, just about every gig I ever had was on a country station. But for a streaming station, I wanted to do that. And one of the pushbacks that I got from trying to sell advertising on K-Back was that advertisers buy what they like. Not a lot of the advertisers like rock. It's funny. I mean, I'm 46, so I didn't grow up in the era where the rock people were really, you know, pariahs, you know, like in the 50s or something, where it was the greasers and it wasn't cool to be that guy, you know. That was the counterculture. And I thought by now that would have kind of evaporated, but it's still very much the thing, you know. Steve Jobs famously said when he shaved, he was going to banks, he kept getting shot down. So he shaved his beard. And they asked him why he shaved. He said, banks don't like beards because you go into those places and they don't take you seriously. So
that's why my credit's so bad.
And see? Yeah. All the time you thought it was because you were black.
No, just my son.
Yes. Yeah. Speaking of which, have you done one of those ancestry things?
I have.
I came up 2% Congolese.
Congolese.
Congolese. Well, I don't think you can get any blacker than that.
Yeah. 2%.
2%?
Wow.
A full 2% Congolese.
I'm amazed. I've never heard you sing Congolese.
No,
I've heard you sing other things, but not Congolese.
It's the clicking that I'm having to challenge with. Not so good at that.
But. No piercings yet?
No.
Okay.
You know, when I was a kid, I used to love the National Geographic because the photos were so gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, today, whenever I look at a photo, the National Geographic photos are the bar by which everything else is measured because they were just fantastic, beautiful imagery. Although it was always naked women you don't want to see naked and weird piercings, but it's a different culture.
And discs in lips that would go out a foot.
Yeah.
You remember those?
How could you forget? There's a thing of nightmares.
Strange stuff.
Forget drinking out of a straw, I guess. So, yeah, I launched the Hog.
All right.
And it's done well. Our cumulative audience now is about 12,000. And there's nothing on it but me just playing music.
Yeah. You did do like one live show, didn't you?
I had started out doing a live show on KBAC and then afterwards for a couple of hours afterwards going over to the Hog. Mm-hmm. Shortly after we launched on April 1st, I thought that was fitting. I would do a live show over there, but it's real life intervenes and it's, I gotta pay the bills. And as it is, the KBAC thing, the internet radio station thing, it pays for itself and that's about it.
Yeah. So you go out and make a few extra bucks being Crazy Frank and Crazy Frank's Karaoke.
Right.
How long have you been doing that?
I've been doing, karaoke in general as a karaoke host for, since 98. So I guess we're 19 years now.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Good for
you.
That's a long stretch for that gig.
It's not been continuous. I've had some breaks and off and on. It started out because I've always had a love of technology. And I met a girl that I was really interested in, and she was a karaoke host, and she was carrying around all these discs. And I said, I bet there's a way
to eliminate all that.
We could eliminate all these discs, and nobody was really doing that in 98. But, I grew up with computers. My very first computer was a TRS-80 Model 1 in 1979. So I've always been around the computer stuff and always enjoyed that and always looked at ways that I can make technology work to my advantage. And the first thing I saw when this girl's and she was just a tiny little thing too, carrying all these discs, and she even had some of those big laser discs. You remember those guys?
I do.
Yeah. So in milk crates, carrying them in, and then queuing up songs was a giant pain because you're flipping through all these CDs and you're worried about CDs getting scratched. And I said, there's got to be a way. So the technology existed. People had been doing similar things. I just started doing it all together with karaoke. And I was probably one of the first digital karaoke guys out there. In fact, I would show up and the biggest pushback I would get was people were used to bringing their own discs back then.
Oh, true.
And they'd say, I want to sing my version of the song. Look, man, I got the song. I don't know if it's the hokey pokey version that you have, but so then what I would do is I would just rip their discs.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now I've got the song if you want to sing it again.
Okay, yeah. Worked for you then. How many songs do you have total?
That's a good question. Because I have so many duplicates over the years, what I would do is I would run into guys that, had the big disc collections and they were just getting out of the business. It's also where I find a lot of the equipment because you find a lot of guys who think they're going to make a ton of money in karaoke and they buy up all this top dollar equipment and they max out their credit cards and then they realize, wow, I'm really not making any money at all. So they sell it off cheap. So I'd buy guys' collections. And I'd rip those into my collection. And I'm in the basement somewhere. I've got boxes upon boxes of discs. But a lot of them are duplicates. As I rip them in anymore, I don't even bother looking to see. Because it used to be hard drive space was at a premium. It was like gold bullion.
Right.
Nowadays, you go to Walmart and get a 2-3 terabyte hard drive for pennies. So now I don't even, like the year 2000 bug, everybody was worried about the 2 zeros. They were trying to save all the little megabytes. It's not a problem anymore. So I have over 500,000 tracks in the catalog now. So just over 500,000 tracks. There are a lot of dupes in there.
Right.
But even
if half of them were dupes, that's still an amazing number of titles.
It's a lot. It's a lot. And, it's funny that it was technology that got me into the business. And now technology has moved beyond that to where you can get a subscription service for $20 a month or something. And have every song that anybody wants, and you just pull it down off the cloud.
Yeah. So, but that would also mean that you'd have to be somewhere that obviously has the Wi-Fi.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's not necessarily going to happen. I mean, Most places do.
Well,
but
now we're going back to the whole argument that I get about my KBAC radio station, and that's people say, oh, well, you know, I don't have wireless connectivity here or there, here or there. I've never been anywhere where I couldn't find a Wi-Fi to jump on or... And thankfully so, because I developed that CrazyFrankKaraoke.com app thing that lets people browse the most of the catalog anyway. So
so besides not having to carry around laser discs and
CDs,
don't
have to carry around the books.
Don't have to carry around the library in book form.
But people still ask, do you have a book? Yeah. And I try to explain to them, if I had a book, it would be 10 feet thick.
Yeah.
And it still wouldn't be the way you want it, because you want it by artist or by title or by blood type, and who knows.
It's a demand.
It's a demand.
I need
audience.
To ask that next time.
The karaoke, you run into people. I first started it, and I called it Big Cheese Karaoke. And I did that because I always thought karaoke was cheesy. I have always been a band guy, and the band guys always thought very poorly of karaoke.
True.
Oh, the karaoke's ruining the business. And 20 years ago, they were saying that. Karaoke and DJs are ruining the live bands. Well, it's not that those guys are ruining the live bands. It's that the live bands aren't any good, and they charge a lot of money. That's it. I said it. You know,
it's a marketplace issue.
You know, absolutely.
Yeah.
If the band was great and drew a crowd, well, then they would get the money.
You're going to pay for it, and people are going to pay you for it.
If you want me to pay you $100 a man for a six-piece, five-piece band, and that's the low end of the spectrum, to come out, and then you're not doing anything but running off my regulars, why would I book the band? I can hire a DJ for a few hundred bucks and put him in the corner.
And 15 to 20-minute break every hour.
Well, yeah, with the bands.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we're going to take a little break, a pause for the cause, and then we're going to try to bang the redhead at the bar, and, which is what that is, you know. Smoke a doobie in the parking lot. We'll be back in 10.
Only 10? Well, okay.
They burn fast.
What is your most favorite thing to do when it comes to technology, being on air, hosting karaoke? What's at the heart of Frank Anderson?
My favorite thing. You know, people ask me all the time about my favorite things. Like, what are my favorite? And I like so many things equally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love wrenching on cars. I love doing the on-air stuff. I mean, yes, it's in my basement. I don't have to necessarily put on pants to do it. But when I come downstairs and I say something and the phone lights up, or I get messages that come in on the request line, people just laughing their asses off about something that I said, that's the best feeling in the world. So that's what I love. And it doesn't make a difference really what medium I'm doing that in. If it's, you know, on the air, or if it's on the Facebook, you know, our Facebook engagement on the KVAC page is crazy. That's the fuel. And it goes back to when I was a performer, when I was a musician, and I would go out and you'd play in front of nobody, and it would suck the energy out of you. Like you would just bleh. I had nothing. It's almost like when I start performing, my tank is empty. I got just enough. I'm running on fumes when I get up on the stage. But if the crowd is into it, that's the fuel. And as long as I just go all night.
Adrenaline,
I mean?
Fuel.
Yeah. You know, and it's just something about that feeling. That's what I love.
Okay. So let's go back a couple of spots then.
Okay.
So. You said you had some down south roots and so forth.
Yes,
so
sir.
What type of bands were you in early on?
Were
those country as well?
Well,
or
no.
Or
see,
that
was
rock route.
That was the odd thing. Well, growing up as a kid, I wanted to play the violin. I wanted to play the violin, or the fiddle, as we called it.
True.
I wanted to play the fiddle in a country band. I thought, oh, my God, that'd be something. That's what I want to do. And my dad moved us to Pennsylvania. We had a... big assembly where they were talking about all the different music programs, and they read off all the instruments, and I was 8 years old. I raised my hand in front of the entire student body, and I said, ain't you got no fiddle? And everybody laughed. Well, that's a violin, idiot, you know. So my dad got me a violin. We thought it was a violin from a flea market. Turned out to be a viola, which is like a violin, just slightly
bigger.
And they said, well, you can't take this class. That's not the right instrument. And even at 8 years old, I'm like, well, but you tune it the same. It's got four strings. It's just slightly bigger. What's the difference? Nope, that's a viola. So out the door I went, and I taught myself to play a bit, and a friend of mine next door, "What are you doing with that violin?" I said, "Oh, well, it's cool, isn't it?" "No, it's not cool. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. If you want girls, you got to learn to play the guitar, man." And that's
and
how
that
I
had snapped that. Then,
and that,
right
so,
there.
Yeah. So then I kind of instinctively followed the, you know, and started doing the guitar, started singing in bands and playing guitar in bands. And it was always rock. But interestingly enough, it was always rock with a little bit of a country-ish kind of a...
More a southern rock?
Or, yeah, well, yeah. Yeah. Or even when I was doing songs that weren't necessarily southern rocky, they would kind of... rub a little straw on it, if you will. Yeah. So, but people seemed to like it, and we had a lot of fun with it. There are days that I miss those. Yeah. Those live performance days as well. But the problem with a band is it's like trying to stay in a good relationship with four women at once. That's a band.
There's some drama.
You know, you're trying, yeah. And then it's, no.
Just one band you were in or several?
Oh, I've been in a bunch over there. Yeah, you know, because you get into one and it's good. It has a good, you know, 6 month run or year run or year and a half run. And then somebody's bass player's wife has a baby and he can't be in the band, or somebody gets a DUI. You know what I mean? It's just, there's always drama that surrounds band guys. It seems like, anyway.
So when was the last time you played in terms of a gig?
Last time I played an actual gig with a band would have been when I was in Wyoming. So six years ago, probably.
How many radio stations you been on? There's more than 10 digits.
I would run out of fingers and toes, I think, over the years, you know. My first actual radio gig was at a little AM station in Loves Park, Illinois, WLUV. And I was getting records for a guy named Mr. T, who did the, like an overnight, it was country, old school, like Hank Senior during the day. But at night, he went low power, and Mr. T would come in and do like a soul hour. And it was all, so I was grabbing him records, and he just chain smoking and drinking, and yeah, baby, what's going on? And so one day, Mr. T didn't show up. So I call the manager, and I'm like, "Oh, Mr. T's not here." And he's like, "Well, then you're going to have to go on." "Well, I don't know anything about this. You just do what Mr. T does." So I'm like, "Hey, baby, what's going on?" And nobody noticed.
You're like Richie Cunningham in that episode of...
Yeah.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, I had Kenny Wayne Shepherd beat. I was doing that long before Kenny Wayne Shepherd was doing it. Yeah. But yeah. And it gets under the skin.
It does. Did you ever have a dream radio job that you wanted to get to?
No. I guess I never really did. I mean, I suppose I would sometimes fantasize about being major market, you know, and doing this and that. But it doesn't matter. It's never mattered to me. It kind of like money, you know. And when it comes to, you know this, when it comes to guys in this business, they pay us nothing because they can.
Exactly.
Because if we wouldn't take the job, there's 100 other guys that would just about pay to have that gig. And but it's never mattered. The money's never mattered. The size of the market has never really mattered. As long as I say something and the phone rings and people interact, I don't... Years ago, I felt a little downtrodden at a gig. And I said, who's listening to this? The cows in the barn because they left the radios on? Who's listening to this? And I'll never forget him. I'm not going to out him, in case he's trying to find a job right now. But he's like, well, and he was a little disgruntled anyway. So he's like, I'll show you who's listening. And he just goes on some huge racial tirade. And he didn't have a job the next day because a lot of people were listening. So the lesson was, if you're ever curious who's listening,
more than you think,
say something you're not supposed to say that and might bite you out in the ass. And you're going to find out exactly how many people are listening.
Any strange listeners that, you know, were constant? Because I had one. My first full-time radio job out of college was out in Greeley, Colorado. And I had to do the early mornings. And there was always this guy who was a truck driver that would get home about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning in a small town called Windsor, just about 5-10 miles outside of Greeley. Mm-hmm. And he would call up immediately after I gave the temperature for the first time in the morning. The phone would ring, and he would call up, and it's 7 degrees cooler coming off the lake here today. every morning. It was always 7 degrees cooler coming off the lake.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you ever put him on?
No, I didn't.
See, that would be funny.
Well,
because it's always going to be the
right,
same.
This was back in 1985 and 86, mm-hmm. and the technology for phones air were toggle switches.
Gotcha. Yeah. This is before the Telos people got involved.
Exactly,
When I was in Wyoming, in Buffalo, Wyoming, of all places, nothing ever happened in that town. Population 5,000-6,000. But I just loved the town. There was one stoplight, and I did a little segment with a character I created named Rufus Carter, who would just tell you what was going on with a stoplight. It's green. Oh, wait. It's yellow. Now it's red. Okay, thanks for that, traffic report.
Back when somebody could be creative. Before corporations came in and said,
That's the sadness with mm-hmm. radio. I'm in a lot of radio groups, and a lot of guys think I'm negative. They say, well, why are you even in this group? You hate radio so much. And no, I don't hate it. I love it. I love radio. I have since I was a little boy. My father was a broadcast engineer. So I genuinely grew up in radio and television stations. I mean, I just loved it. I don't want it to die. I don't want it to go away. But the reason that it is because people go where the entertainment is. And for many years, they were stuck listening to it. I mean, if you were in a small town or even in a larger town, and you're in your car, what else were you going to listen to? You were stuck. You were stuck with whatever your seek button would land on. Whatever you
had a seek button.
Whatever you could tune in, yeah. They had you by the short hairs. And then when deregulation came along, well, now you've got one corporation can own. What's their limit now? 6-7 in a market? Something like that? Maybe more?
More than that, yeah.
So
most have eight.
One corporate station can own like 8 signals in the market. So you can essentially, between two companies, own the dial. That's what you get in Sioux Falls.
True.
You got Midwest Communications and you got Town Square. Okay. And they own the dial. And you got little John, on the outskirts of town with his AM with an FM translator. Yeah. And God bless John Small. I love that guy to death.
He is a dandy.
He's got in his mind how he wants to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got he owns it, so he's welcome to do it. And but when you're up against two stations or two groups that essentially own the market, there's really no way to get in there.
That's true.
I mean, even when you beat them in the ratings, yeah, but if I buy there, I get 8 stations or 7 stations. So, and it does kind of suck that the corporate mindset, when they started buying up these stations, is to essentially say, look, we're going to take what worked in Boise and we're going to duplicate it everywhere else. But the people who live in Boise are completely different than the people who live in Sioux Falls or somewhere else. Now, while some of the music selection may be similar, what's going to be the top 40 is always going to be the top 40-ish stuff with limited deviation. If you take the personality out of the guy that or gal who's talking in between the songs, the connection that people have with the station, and that's what they've lost. They've genuinely lost that in regular terrestrial radio. And I think that's one of the reasons why KBAC has done so well. It's because I bring that personality and I have that connection with the people. And I'm a local dude. You might run into me in Hy-Vee. You might run into doing a podcast with Dave and Woodgrain Brewery here. So, it really just kind of sucks. It makes me sad for broadcasting.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think technology is going to take us next in different medium?
What I'm seeing right now in my mind is that the proliferation of the 5G, the proliferation of data, the accessibility to the data. The sky's the limit now. I mean, look how we're set up now.
Yeah.
Imagine when you first got into this business.
And 37 years ago.
Well, yeah, you're like 10 years older than I am, so it's not that. But even in the 10 years from when you started, from when I started,
true.
The technology, and now we've got a board. When I was doing my first remotes, you had to bring an engineer.
Oh, and remember the old MARTI units?
Oh, for sure.
That weighed 500 pounds?
Yeah, well, the last one of those that I used on a regular basis anyway was in Oberlin, Ohio. And we had a Chevy Astro van that had a mast for a MARTI.
I recall those.
But and we had Dr. R.F. Burns, on the back. Don't touch this. You're going to get zapped. Because it's a lot of power coming out of that Marty up that mast antenna. And then we were at the fair, and I would carry around what we called the purse Marty, which was, I don't know, probably 20 pounds, but it looked like a purse with a big old antenna hanging off of it. I felt like one of those World War II Army guys.
Yeah.
And then running around to the different booths with a microphone. And so, yeah, technology, I think what we're going to find is it's going to keep getting smaller and smaller. We're going to find internet more and more integrated. And I think it's still people are always going to have a commute. Until the driverless car becomes the norm, people are always going to have that commute. And they're always going to have things that they can't watch. There's always going to be a need for the audio program. I think that's why you see podcasts taken off like they have. And if you look at, I don't know how in-depth you've gotten research as far as podcasts are concerned, but the number of people who listen to podcasts goes up exponentially every year. And it's because it's on-demand listening, which we've established people love to do. When's the last time you waited to lay the clock to watch a show?
True.
Well, I want to watch such and such a show. It's on Thursdays at 8. I'll catch it Friday because it's recorded and I can just zip through the commercials. People love on-demand. And they love to be able to listen to something as they're doing something else, whether that be music or talk radio or podcasts. And you bring a personality to it, and you got a winning combination. So I can't predict the flying car or anything like that. I think when you look at predictions 50 years ago, are things really that much different? Like if you were to take a guy from 1950s and plop him right out here on the corner right now, and he were to look around, aside from the automobiles looking funnier, they still run on gas.
True.
You know, they still have four doors and four tires and
banks, hotels,
yeah. Christmas lights, stoplights. Yeah. You know, the fundamentals rarely change, and I think that's what with podcasting, with streaming. Radio is eventually going to just die off. That spectrum will be gone. I mean, it's just a certainty. As people, the demand and the need for more and more bandwidth for their digital devices, they're going to gobble up that bandwidth. That's what happened with the television. You went to the high-def television, changed the band, freed up that band for other stuff. What was that other stuff? Mobile communications. So that's the way it's going to go. I think there's always going to be guys like you and I finding a place to do our thing and people who want to listen to it. Howard Stern, who I have always admired, not necessarily for what he says, but just the way he just, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to entertain an audience, I'm going to be real, and I'm going to do it. He established that people will go anywhere that the entertainment is. With the Sirius XM thing that he did, and people were subscribing to that. Which is why I laugh when people say, oh, well, streaming, who's going to listen to that? Well, I got a phone in my pocket, do you? Who doesn't? Unless you're carrying around a jitterbug phone, everything is capable of getting on the internet and streaming. And I, you know, my cell phone plan is $45 a month.
Yeah.
Unlimited everything.
There's definitely a market for things now, and it's going to grow. And I wish you the best with everything you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
I do want to just get a little bit from you besides shop talk. You said you like wrenching on cars. What are your other hobbies?
Playing music, wrenching on guitars as well. I've built a few of those. I love wrenching on cars. I like old German cars. I like fixing those things up. Just fun to get. It's just fun for me to get things going that weren't running. I like fixing things, and I love thrift shops, man. I love deals.
Oh.
I love hitting the thrift shops.
Yeah. Most of my clothes are $2.75 a piece.
Mine too, man. Yeah. I, you know, I tear them up too quickly.
Well, mine used to be that I outgrew them too quickly, but we got control over that. Finally. All right. Frank, it has been a pleasure.
Yeah,
I appreciate
man.
You.
Is it that time already?
Look at that. We've gone about 35 minutes here, so certainly appreciate your time coming out in the evening because you wake up early and you just get to work right away and you don't seem to stop.
It seems like it some days.
Yeah.
Other day, but then I look back and I really don't get much done. So.
Well, you got a lot done here.
Thank you again.
Appreciate it. And we're going to have more coming up in just a moment on the Dave Holly Hour.
Dr. Perry Langston and Dr. Corey Tootie provide the very best chiropractic care to Sioux Falls.
at XL Chiropractic, the focus is to improve your overall health and spirit, body, mind, and will, relieving your pain and helping you in your wellness goals. Discover how to get results the natural way. 605-332-9235 or xlchiros.com. That's EXCELCHIROS.com. XL Chiropractic, excellent care for excellent people.
He's never met a meal he didn't like. Once again, here's Dave Holly.
Welcome back. Great to have you along again on Weekend Eve as we make our way through another hour of the Dave Holly Hour podcast. So glad to have all of you along, and so glad to have this gentleman along with me today. John Bowe, how are you? It's been a while.
Yeah, a long time. I think it was Tony and Tina's wedding.
That was the last time. Yeah, and so it's been a while since we've done some things together, but you have kept busy the whole time because you are the artistic director at Old Town Dinner Theater.
Yep, I'm also the tech director as well.
So. You're wearing more than one hat these days.
Oh, yes. So direct the shows, props, costumes, build the sets, lights, sound.
Oh, my. Yeah, they keep you hopping down there.
Yeah.
But you're enjoying it.
Oh, yeah. It's something where I would not want to work this much if it weren't for something that I really love.
Right. And you've been passionate about theater and entertaining for a long, long time. Your whole family is.
Yep.
In fact, when I was telling my wife, I said, well, I'm going to interview John Bowe, you know, artistic director, Old Town Dinner Theater. She says, why does that name sound familiar? I said, well, you've probably seen me interact with his mom, his dad, his wife. We've been in shows together. I've never been in a show with your brother, but I did do a little gig one time where we had to dress up as characters. So I think I've been around everybody.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
Oh, it is. It's a lot of fun. My parents never really had much of an interest in being actors, but they got to know John Baranek really well when he was directing The Nutcracker when I was in, let's say, 7th or 8th grade, because he was directing at the Community Playhouse. Mm-hmm. And my mom got really involved because there were so many kids involved. They needed, you know, parent coordinators and
chaperones,
so forth. And they got to know John really well, and then the first time he directed Tony and Tina's Wedding, he gave him a call. He's like, you guys should come audition. And I talked him into it, and they just loved it.
All right. Was that the first love when you were in The Nutcracker, or were there things prior to that that you said, you know, this acting thing and just performing is a cool thing?
Oh, yeah. So when I was a kid at Christ the King grade school, every year we would go to the Community Playhouse for performance. Sometimes it was the Christmas show. I remember seeing The Best Christmas Pageant Ever. It was one of the first ones I saw. And Andy Hendrickson would come out before the shows and welcome everyone. And he'd say, if this looks like something you want to do, we have auditions for every show. They're open to everybody. Come on down. And I was at the next audition. And I auditioned probably four or five times before I finally made it in The Wind in the Willows when I was 12.
12 years old, wow.
And since then, There's only been a 2-year period where I wasn't involved in theater. That's the longest I've gone without being involved in something since I was 12.
Wow, incredible. Well, it's so incredible to see all the great talent that the Sioux Empire has in all genres of arts and entertainment. And you are one of those that you can progress from being an actor to being a director. What sparked that?
Well, it's really weird because in college, when I was forced to sign up for directing class, I remember saying, why do I have to take this stupid class? I'm never going to direct a show when I get out of college. And I was firm on that. Like, I loved acting, had no interest in directing. And then I got, right out of college, I got the job as the assistant artistic director at Old Town. Mm-hmm. And Jim Wood asked me, you know, would you be willing to direct a show? We do a guest director every year. And I'm like, I guess. Like,
is this job dependent?
So I did it, and I had a lot of fun because I realized, you know, I've worked with a number of directors over the years where it was nice to be able to go, oh, I loved when directors do this. I hate it when directors do this. And I can kind of pick and choose the things that I think work the best and like you said, things that repelled me from one certain director or another, and the things that drew me to one certain director. And I really, you know, in the end, found that I think it's important for every director to have been an actor at some point, because you understand the approach without being able to without having done it before. You just don't have the idea of the actor mindset, what will get through to them best. And because, like, line readings are something I hate, like when the director's just like, just say it like this. And it's like, well, I'm an actor, I want to be able to interpret. Tell me how you want me to say it, and then let me interpret that. So that's one thing I'm really conscious about. And giving the actors freedom, like, some directors, you know, have, like, very mapped out blocking you have to do. I'll do that at first, but then, you know, I'll say, if you feel like moving, move. Like, I'm not locked into this. I'm not so arrogant to think my ideas are better than everyone else's here. And I really think it's a better working environment when you have that give and take.
And it gets you what you want as a result eventually.
Yeah. Oh, and that's the other thing I learned in college as well. An actor will remember their blocking much better if it feels natural. If they have to do this awkward movement, they get lost and they can't figure out where they're supposed to be. But if they have a line that compels them to move and it looks good, I'd much rather them do that than stick to my rigid blocking.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about that and so forth, but we want to make sure that this is, you know, Weekend Eve. But next Weekend Eve, the 21st of November,
yes,
is opening night for the next show in Old Town.
Yes.
Sorry, Wrong Chimney.
Yep.
That brings together a lot of things on the mind, especially for someone that does play Santa Claus. Because that's always been my fear when I've shown up at somebody's house. I hope this is the right address. So give us a background of this story and what we can expect as an audience.
Well, it's very much a farce of a show. It's about a newlywed couple approaching Christmas, where the husband wants to get his wife just a wonderful gift, but doesn't make enough money to do that. So he, on the side, takes a job as a department store Santa Claus, and just tells his wife he's working late. Well, then the combination of factors, her overhearing the wrong part of a conversation, him being gone, her already having some suspicions, she immediately thinks he's having an affair. And so she conspires with the woman's husband across the hall, and then at one point it seems like they're having an affair. And in the middle of all this, there's this Santa Claus burglar who shows up, and a lot of running around in and outdoors, very, like I said, very farcical, just a fun show.
Sounds like it's going to be, and especially holiday time, you know, because I always respect no matter what a group or a troop does, but there are certain things that maybe play better at the holiday than trying to do something incredibly serious. So that just sounds like holiday when you get a farcical name like that. Sorry, Wrong Chimney. Tell us about the cast.
I got a fun group ranging from one guy who I've never worked with before to people I've worked with, you know, 6, 7, 8 times. And same with the experience level. There's one woman in the show who her first show was at Old Town, I think 3 years ago, and she just keeps coming back, you know. So, and then, like, our new guy, Anthony, he went to school for theater but hasn't done anything in the area yet. He moved here from Nebraska, and he's just having a great time. So it's a younger cast, which at Old Town, I feel like a lot of our shows skew a little older, at least as far as the cast goes. So normally, I'm the young guy in the group, and with this one, other than one of our actors, I'm the second oldest in the group. So it's an interesting perspective on this side.
And is that, going back to your directing approach and so forth, is that different for you, directing more young people?
It is, because I don't know if there's the part of me, and maybe just how I was raised, whatever, the kind of respecting your elders type of thing, where it's almost like I'm more conscious of how I give a note when it's someone like, you know, someone who's older, has more experience, and on the back of my head, I'm like, I don't want to come off like a jerk. But when it's someone younger, I almost feel like more of a guide for them. Mm-hmm. And so, not that I'll say something disrespectful, but I won't beat around the bush. I'll just cut right to it.
Yeah, all right. So it's a fun time coming up starting next Thursday, the 21st of November. Ticket prices, where can we get them, et cetera?
You can go to our website, oldtowntheater.org, and it's there's E's at the end of almost everything. So it's oldtowntheatre.org.
All right.
Or you can call our box office. That's 372-4653. Tickets, we started something new this year. We've got general admission tickets. They're $40. And then the seated tickets are $45. And the main difference is our general admission, we've got two long tables. If you get tickets at those tables, you'll be sitting with, you know, whoever else buys those tickets.
Right.
The seated tickets, then you get your own table for however many are in your group. So some people in the past have, you know, when they get their tickets, because there used to always be seated tickets, will tell us, well, if you want to sit us with anyone else, we're fine with that. We love meeting people. Yeah. So between that and knowing that we can sell, you know, we have a bigger capacity with having two big tables in the front. It's made it really nice. We've got, because normally we sell out at about 90-ish. We've got, I think one night we've got 120. And, you know, we're selling out closer to that 100-plus mark.
Days of the week and show times?
They're Thursday through Sunday, most weekends. So we open the weekend before Thanksgiving. So we have a full weekend that week. And then after Thanksgiving, we just have that Saturday, Sunday. And then back to Thursday through Sunday up until after Christmas. Then we just have another Saturday, Sunday. Now, the Thursday, Friday performances, dinner starts at 6:30. Saturday, Sunday, dinner starts at 5:30.
Excellent. So a good time. How long does the show take approximately?
This one's a slightly shorter show. So we've got about 45-minute first act, then a 20-minute intermission, and a 35-minute second act. So math, 55, 45, so about an hour 40 once the show starts. We do have an hour and a half before that for dinner, but you get soup, salad, dinner, and then the first act, then intermission, you get your dessert.
Great time, and really looking forward to this show. I was telling you before we started the interview, something, and I mentioned it to last week on the show as well, something that the group of us started. There's five of us that go to a lot of different shows, whether it be comedy or music or performances. And we were at a show, and I had already purchased tickets for all of us, the five of us, for the Haig Brothers coming up. That's always a great show in December, the pavilion that I like to go to. So I'm going to take everybody. So I just had done that a while back and said, Merry Christmas. Well, we're at Goodnight Theater. And one of their performances, and in the playbill is your ad for Sorry, Wrong Chimney. I go, boy, that'd be kind of cool to go to, wouldn't it? And now it starts spreading around, you know, who could go, who wants to go, and so forth. And then one of the gal gets out her phone, and she goes, well, Merry Christmas, everybody. She bought five tickets for the group. And then it spreads, so we're going to five different shows throughout the holidays. And like I mentioned earlier, when you see a show titled Sorry, Wrong Chimney, you have to go to that, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, that's one thing I love about doing a holiday-themed show around the holidays. It gets me into the spirit that much quicker.
Like, right.
My wife loves Christmas. Our Christmas tree goes up the day after Halloween. We don't decorate it or anything, but the tree goes up with lights. Mm-hmm. And then this year, we actually... I recently got into 3D printing, so
we
printed off a bunch of Thanksgiving decorations. So we've got our Thanksgiving tree right now. So we always start our holiday season before most people, and when we have a holiday show, we start rehearsals at the beginning of October, and it just starts pulling me in right away.
Yeah. Were you mind reading on that next question of mine?
What?
I was going to say, when did rehearsal start, and how long does it take? Because it is a commitment for someone to do a show like this, especially at the holidays, because you're going to be covering two different holidays in your run.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's one thing in the past. Like, we used to always do a musical around the holidays, and for years, we always had a holiday musical. But it's tough to find people, especially when you start narrowing it down of, you know, okay, you have to be an actor and you have to be able to sing and you have to be this age, and you just start cutting it down to a certain amount of people, and you need to be available over the holidays, right, the busiest time of the year. So in the end, like, I was a little nervous going into these auditions because it's a medium-sized cast, and going into the holidays, I usually shoot for a smaller cast show just in case.
Right.
And I was overwhelmed. I could have cast this show twice over and then still had extra people. But it's nice that they're willing to do it during this time of year.
Great cushion to have.
You've got, when you're in a show at Old Town, you're involved with it for basically 3 months. Six weeks of rehearsal, and then 5 to 6 weeks of performances. So it's a commitment.
What's the difference versus a regular stage show versus a dinner theater? Do you have to approach the directing, the blocking, the lighting? Are there nuances to that versus a regular stage auditorium?
The way we do it, not a lot of differences, because I know there's some dinner theaters where you actually eat while the play is going on. With us, you do all your eating before and at intermission. So once the show starts, it's, other than being at a table instead of in a row, it's pretty much the same. You know, you will have clinking water glasses a little bit, or occasionally, a spill. But for the most part, the other thing, as far as the tech goes, there have been a few times where I would have liked to extend the stage out, or, you know, we've got a little theater without wings, so there have been times where I've had ideas to try to have multiple locations, but if you use any of A-level, that's taking out, you know, tables, and so, like, there's a big difference in what we can sell if I encroach into our, well, A-level is the one closest to the stage, but if I encroach into that. So it's made it more interesting as far as set design.
So the business part does parlay its way into that then as well, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. There was 1 year where Jim insisted on going out into the house where there's a basement. In the show, so like the regular house is on stage, and then down off to the side over here was the basement. So that's when Diane used to work there. She was not happy that Jim was taking, you know, basically 2 to 3 tables per show times 20 shows. You know, that adds up.
Yes, it does. Woodbury, no doubt about that. Well, this is the second of your 2019-2020 season. You started off with, oh, I missed it. I don't know. Beer for breakfast.
Yes.
How did that go?
Oh, that was a huge success. Number of people, I don't know if it just hit them just the right way, or it's just, you know, the kind of the magic of having the right cast and, you know, the right group of people. But number of people said, favorite show we've ever done, said that if we did that show every year, they'd be back every year. It just... said it hit just right, so that was nice.
That's good. So you had a great start. It sounds like you're going to have another great show. Looking forward to it. Let's go into 2020 then. Two more shows on this billing, correct?
Yes.
What do we have coming up?
The next one is Wife Begins at 40.
You pick great titles.
Oh, yeah. Well, and not that we necessarily do it this way, but our quickest selling show that we've ever done was a show called Nana's Naughty Knickers.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're fairly certain based on the title of the show. So it's really nice when you've got a title that grabs you.
True. Yeah.
I mean, with this Wife Begins at 40, it's a British farce. The director, Ray, or not the director, the playwright, Ray Cooney, he has written a number of shows. My favorite show is a Ray Cooney show, and a number of other ones that I've really liked. So I try to be sparing because I don't want to run through them all quickly, but he's another farcical playwright. It's this lady who's turning 40, and her husband has no interest in a sex life anymore. And at first she's trying to convince him, and then she wants a divorce, and then he's trying to, like, make himself have a more of a sex drive, and it's there's a really fun scene in the second act I don't want to spoil, but they try to make it work at one point.
Sounds great. Excuse me, just a moment. Sorry about that. By the way, we should explain some of the noise. We're recording this at the Source, a little alcove area near it, and apparently one of the stores, while it's the holiday, has been doing some reconstructing of some sort. You know, we're used to having the occasional clank of a glass or something, but so we didn't mean to disturb everyone with that, but that's what you have to put up with for quality entertainment. Okay. So when will auditions start for Wife Begins at 40?
Actually, that first week, or the first Monday, Tuesday in September, or in December, sorry. We have auditions pretty far out from when we start rehearsals. So we won't actually start rehearsals until, I believe, that first week in January. But that way we can get a cast together, get everyone their scripts. They can start working on lines if they want to. But yeah, it also makes it a much less stressful for me. Once I know I've got my cast, we're good to go, then I can finish out the run of the current show and not have to worry about it.
And move on. Okay. And so then after that, what rounds out the season?
The musical comedy Murders of 1940. That was my... when I took intro to acting my freshman year of high school, that was my final project, was doing a prompt book for this show. And then my first show I did tech for at Old Town in 2006 was Musical Comedy Murders of 1940. And so when we brought it up, because we try not to recycle a show until we get at least 10 years out,
mm-hmm.
When it came up as a possibility, I really wanted to jump on it because I've loved the show for 22 years now, and I've always wanted to do it. But when I was stage managing for it, when we did it at Old Town before, man, I just wanted to be up there. Because, of course, especially as a young actor, any script I read, I put myself in it immediately. This is where I'd want to be. This is what I would do. Now, this time around, I don't think I'll be acting in it. But who knows? It's a bigger cast for what we normally have. So you may see me up there if it's needed. But more than likely, I'll just be directing it.
All right. Well, regardless, we wish you well the rest of the season. So you have such a busy life with this. And you've got some little kids, too.
Yep.
Where do you find some time for just John Bo?
Usually late at night. Mm-hmm. I don't have the best sleep schedule, but usually get home from rehearsal 10:30, and the kids are in bed by then. And then from about 10:30 until any time between midnight and when I first got my 3D printer, it was like 3 or 4 in the morning. But normally, I try to be in bed before 2.
All right. Well, the 3D printing, is that like the big hobby right now for you?
Oh yeah. So I got the printer back in August. And I don't think I was in bed before 3 a.m. for at least 2 or 3 weeks. It's a lot. Well, it's because so for a few years now, I've been 3D modeling. I've got, you know, I took a few classes and really got into it, you know, just because I've never been great at drawing. But 3D modeling, it's, you know, more technical version of drawing, so I can create something that looks really good. Because I can enter the values that I need and, you know, adjust this line. And, you know, so I really enjoyed the 3D modeling, but never thought, well, now I can make it. But so now that I got the 3D printer, I made some Dungeons and Dragons dice. I won't list everything because I've probably made a couple hundred things.
Wow.
But I actually... I was really excited to be able to incorporate it with Old Town. So, and maybe someone else knows where I can find this. I'm not sure. But for years, I tried to find a light switch for theater, something that just has a flat back that'll flip up and down. But all I could ever, you know, because a regular light switch has a big chunk on the back. You have to cut a hole in the flat.
Mm-hmm.
Could never find it. And then right after I got my 3D printer, the first show, I was like, I need a light switch.
I'm going to finally make it.
And that was really exciting. Oh, and I made a thermostat for this set as well. Like, for years, there have been, you know, certain things where I'm like, I know what I want. I just don't know where to find it. Where, you know, I'll go to the dollar store and find a bunch of pieces I can glue and paint and, you know, make the prop that I need. And now with this, where I can make exactly what I need, the exact specifications, that's been really nice.
That's great. What a way to tie in your hobby into your profession.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, keep making great things with your 3D printer and keep bringing us great shows at Old Town Dinner Theater in Worthing. We look forward to seeing the show in just a few weeks. It starts next Thursday, the 21st, oldtowntheater.org. Remember the E on town, old theater with the R-E, not the E-R.
Yes.
There we go. We got it. Thank you so much, John. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
And we'll be back with more in just a moment.
Ladies, when it's time to give your nails some love, get that extra special treatment from Quality Nails on South Minnesota Avenue in Sioux Falls. Manicures and pedicures that look great and make you feel fantastic. Zaya and Tony provide professional care for your hands and feet, whether you just want the basics or an extra special look with added flair. Oh, and guys, it's okay to treat yourself too. Quality Nails. Call for an appointment. 605-334-1463.
Welcome back. Once again, here's Dave Holly.
Well, thanks again to Crazy Frank Anderson from KBAC Internet Radio, The Hawk, and also Crazy Frank Karaoke, to John Bow, Artistic Director at Old Town Dinner Theater in Worthing, with their show coming up next week. As for me, I'm going to be hosting Pirate Trivia tomorrow night at the Sky Lounge in T. Look forward to having you there. And next week on this show, the Executive Director of the Levitt at the Falls, Nancy Halverson, will be joining us. Looking forward to talking to her about what an incredible inaugural season they had and what's coming up for the sophomore year. That's next week. Here on the Dave Holly Hour podcast, I'm Dave Holly. For me, every day is a holiday. Have a great week.
The Dave Holly Hour has been brought to you by Dazzle Shows Presents, The Vaudies, and Dipsy Doodle Productions, and is produced by Big D Entertainment.